Hello, hospitalitarians. It's Kyle back with another episode of the Hospitality MD podcast and our first episode of 2021. On today's episode, Derek Paquet. Derek started his first business when he was 6 years old and ever since has focused on creating solutions that provide better experiences. Coming out of business school, Derek created CoatChecks, a check-in, check-out technology after several poor interactions with check rooms. Derek appeared on Shark Tank in 2013 and the original idea has evolved into something much bigger as Derek and his team continue to iterate and learn from customers. Today, CoatChecks is the flagship brand of Checksology and has expanded beyond CoatCheck to address other pain points associated with the event and hospitality industry, including a pivot in 2020 to luggage storage at hotels and casinos. Derek is proudly building a company dedicated to helping companies elevate their guest experience by eliminating the paper claim ticket one tearaway stub at a time. Now, we've got a great episode in store for you all today. And if you like what you hear, please be sure to write a review on Apple Podcasts, subscribe, and share this with your hospitality friends. Hospitality MD is also offering a suite of hotel management and consulting services based in our philosophy that hospitality is everyone's business. To find out more, visit www.hospitality-md.com. Enjoy today's episode. Derek, thanks for being on Hospitality MD. It's a real pleasure to have you.
It's great to be here, man.
So you and Greg actually at the beginning of the year had kind of like a demo call. I think you had reached out to him, right? I don't know if you remember about maybe setting up the Checksology technology at the hotel, right?
Yeah, it was probably right after COVID hit. You know, we decided to pivot to, oh, wow, okay, we had this app called CoatChecks for, you know, nightclubs, bars, museums, convention centers, and we had just started an opportunity with the Hilton Midtown here in New York, and it really started to pick up at their convention space, and we were like, wow, this could really work for luggage storage, but we really don't know much about the hotel industry. So the initial conversations, and that's kind of where we reached out to Greg, and Greg was awesome. I mean, he was definitely someone who just really got us kind of up to speed with what was going on in sort of the bellman situations with how they handle luggage. So yeah, I mean, Greg was really early on in our discovery to just understand, you know, how bellman were working with luggage prior to COVID. And then what were they thinking to, you know, as far as process changes to make it safer to handle people's luggage. And, you know, Greg not only helped me with kind of understanding, you know, how they did it in the past, but coming up with ideas as well for how our application that we use for code checking can come in and help with, you know, what we needed to change to make it work for luggage storage. So Greg, if you're out there, really appreciate it.
Awesome. Yeah. I mean, and like that was at such like, cause right when COVID started, especially like, you know, having, you know, been working in a hotel at the time, the same hotel Greg was working at actually, was a lot of conversation about, you know, verbiage to training for the front facing team members of, okay, if somebody asks you about this coronavirus, whatever, you know, this new thing is that we don't know anything about, what do you say to them? Or what can we do to make it more approachable? And we didn't really know the devastation that was going to be had on the industry at that specific time. But before we talk about your pivot, which seemed to happen in great timing, I want to talk a little bit about your background so we have a little context of who you are. I mean, you're a serial entrepreneur, it sounds like, and having started businesses at 6 years old and now, you know, being on Shark Tank and successfully moving into CoatChecks and now Checksology. I mean, you've done a lot. So take me back to that 6-year-old Derek. Like, what...
What were you thinking? What were you doing? It seems a little early on, right?
Yeah, I would say, you know, most of the little things I started when I was little, six up till really college, they were more, I would call them in quotes, side hustles, right? They were, you know, they weren't established LLC type businesses. So, you know, when I was six, I was still living in Bamako in Mali in West Africa. And so sort of the culture there is very, you know, it's very go-getter. It's very, you know, you got to like really work to get something happening. So all my neighborhood friends, you know, they were just, you know, when we play soccer outside, you know, it was, you know, you'd see some of them would sell water in plastic bags, right? Like they were just creatively thinking about how to make, you know, a nickel here or there. And so it kind of like, when you grow up in that culture, like the example, when you go to the market, when you buy chicken, it's not just a price like $5 for chicken. It's you negotiate, right? To like what that, you know, price is going to be. So it created this sort of culture where I'm like, oh, I want to do something like all my friends are doing. So I started a bike. I had a bike and it was like a bike sharing business where people could for like, you know, 10 cents borrow my bike for, you know, an hour, right? Or whatever. And, you know, it made me as a six-year-old, significant money. So for being a six-year-old, right? And that was when I'm like, oh, this is fun. You know, this is like a fun thing. It's the game of business, you know, finding a pain point, testing something out, seeing if it helps and seeing if it can, you know, make money. So yeah, it started at six and then slowly over time it got better. Like I, you know, figured out better ways to do things. And, you know, moving to the States and then going to Indiana University, the business I started there was called the Hoosier Coat Check, because at all the nightclubs they didn't provide any coat checking service. You just kind of go throw your coat in the corner, hope someone doesn't steal it, or you freeze in line, right? And then, you know, on the way home, you're like, oh, you know, at the time there weren't Ubers, right? So you'd have to walk, you'd get a ride there, have a couple of drinks. You couldn't really, you know, no one could drive home. So you'd walk home. And I thought it was crazy that college towns don't provide coat checking like cities like New York, right? So that's kind of how I started. And everything I've done has just kind of been one step more from that Hoosier Coat Check, which was a staffing ticket-based, claim ticket-based business, to now, you know, building technology to, you know, kill the claim ticket and all the problems that they cause.
So you were like the first person to think of the zip car idea, right? With the
shucks.
Well, that's perfect. Awesome. That's awesome, man. Like to it's in your spirit, right? Like not that it was ever necessarily an LLC or any of these things, but it was always something you were thinking about, being aware of. I'm sure it develops a lot of observational and kind of just people awareness skills as you start to think about what you can do to help other people. In terms of like, cause I went to University of Iowa, didn't graduate, but I went there for some time. And like, I just, the image of like seeing girls like not dressed for the weather, right, with no coat, like literally shivering and like hugging themselves as they walk down to get to the bar, or standing in line, or guys with their button down shirts, with no coat, just freezing, you know, and we're talking about, you know, Indiana and Iowa. So in the winter, it's cold. And at night it's cold. And I wish that when I was at University of Iowa, there was some sort of coat checking business, because there literally was none. That was definitely an interesting observation on your part. So then, you know, you start this and then at 23, right, back in 2013 or 2012, you were on Shark Tank.
Yeah. 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 The Midwest culture is insane, right? It's, you know, people, and that's what I didn't understand, you know, coming from the East Coast. So after Bamako, I moved to DC area and just seeing, you know, in the Midwest, everyone's just so lax, but yeah, like they were willing to do this sort of freezing situation to me was just kind of mind boggling. And you mentioned a good point, solving problems, right? It was all about pain points, right? And then that was sort of when, you know, at 23, when I kind of started the Hoosier Coat Check, it was, you know, at the time Shark Tank had just kind of started. And that's kind of how, you know, when you're like, okay, what's my problem right now? I'm like, how do I get exposure to this pain point of claim tickets? Everyone is just accustomed to it. It's like a normal thing when you check in a coat, you get a claim ticket, you are responsible for this business, you know, making sure that they give it back to you. They're not responsible. And if I lose this claim ticket, sorry, you know, wait till the end of the night. Hopefully we still have it. Otherwise, too bad. And it was crazy. So that was that pain point, you know, solving how can we solve this claim ticket? And then what was interesting about Shark Tank, I looked at it as an opportunity. You know, yes, there's the investment side opportunity there, but my next pain point after I started the Hoosier Code Check was, how do I tell people about this idea I have to get rid of the claim ticket? And I looked at Shark Tank as like, this is a way to tell your story to the, you know, the, not the world, but to the nation. Right. And so for me, that was the reason I applied. And I think I applied very differently than how most people do it. And, but yeah, that was sort of a cool experience.
Well, how did you apply?
So, yeah. So most people, like, they send you a questionnaire, like, what is your business? What do you offer? Tell us about yourself. And the answer to I don't even remember what the first question was. I didn't even answer the first question. It was, hi, my name is Derek Paquet. I started a business at, you know, Kilroy's on Kirkwood at Indiana University. Mark Cuban went to Indiana University and started his first business in Kilroy's on Kirkwood. I don't remember what the next question was, but I wrote, you know, my business generated $50,000 in 5 months. You know, Mark Cuban's business generated, I think, maybe less than that in that same period, right? Mark Cuban, and then the next question, Mark Cuban started a tech company, you know, stemming off of him, you know, going through these pain points from college to where, you know, to when he was 30, that became a $1 billion company. I'm doing the same thing. We should talk. And then that was it. I didn't tell them anything else. I submitted that. And sure enough, an assistant producer called me and was like, okay, you need to tell me more. But I knew that if I just put my, you know, what I was doing and everything in that questionnaire, just like the other thousands of people that apply, I just become a stack in the paper. And I knew that, okay, the best way to kind of get this was my assumption. I could have been wrong. Like, they could be like, what is this? You know, throw it away. But it worked, right? An assistant producer called me and was, tell me more. What are you doing, right? And once I got to pitch it to this assistant producer on the phone, they then became an internal advocate up to the main producers, and they helped guide me along the way. So it's all about, again, you know, thinking differently. How do you set yourself apart from the norm to get noticed, to solve something? And so that was an interesting part of that process.
Yeah, like it's even your application process was entrepreneurial in its own right to a certain extent, you know, kind of thinking outside the box, innovating. What's your pain point, right? I don't want to be a paper in the stack, so I'm going to innovate. I'm going to come up with something. Now, just out of curiosity, for those who may be wondering who are listening, how long did that process take you from application to being on the show? Because you don't really hear about that behind the scenes.
Oh, yeah. And I wanted to make one point, right, about what you mentioned there about entrepreneurial in the way I filled out the paperwork. Now, you know, that could have gone two ways, right? And this is like all about the risk taking. When you fill something out like that, it could have totally, no one looked at it, or it, you know, can work. And that was sort of one of those moments in my life when I'm like, oh, taking risk, like something like that actually, you know, works. And that was like one of the moments that I look back on that and I'm like, okay, I, you know, that kind of set the foundation for how we do things with marketing and creativity here at the company. So, yeah, I just kind of wanted to, you know, a lot of people are like, that never works. It works sometimes, right? So anyways, I bring that up. But yeah, the process from there. So, you know, filled out the application. Within about a week, the producer called, and then it takes, you know, it probably took about 6 months of time before it actually was produced, and then another like 3 or 4 months before it aired. So, but the work along the way was, they asked me to then fill out like a 40-page questionnaire to really understand the business and its situation. And then there was a formative video they wanted so the producers could see me and my character and, you know, just my story. But then from there, it was pretty quick. You know, they help you script your opener when you walk in to the tank, and then they kind of prep you with the types of questions you'll be asking when you're out there in Culver City for filming. But the filming was quick. You know, we were there, let's say Friday we got in, Saturday, you know, was everything, and then we were out Sunday. So they are very efficient with the actual production.
Well, it sounds like certainly an opportunity of a lifetime for you. And, you know, I know it's been so many years and you're still getting asked about it, right? But you've certainly kind of made a name for yourself independent of Shark Tank, it seems, at this point in time. Would you agree with that? Do you feel like you've been able to kind of establish yourself from there?
Yeah, I would say, you know, it definitely was the biggest attraction to the problem we were solving, right? It created a noise. I mean, 8 million people watched that episode that day it aired. And since then, it's probably at about 30 million views on this issue, right, on this problem since. So it stemmed, you know, the conversation for us around this claim ticket's a problem, right? It creates lines, you know, it creates claims. It's an antiquated process. And then I think what we've done from there, right, extending now from code checking to luggage storage to rentals, you know, we've as a company have made, you know, a bigger stance and have done a lot more. So I'd hope that that's how people look at, you know, when they think about what we do and, you know, the company, you know, that it's really moved a lot since the 2013 idea days of what we pitched on Shark Tank.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And actually, you know, I actually remember like I watching it like on TV with my family. Like I remember being at home with my mom and dad. This was 2013. So I was in middle school. I think I was in seventh grade at the time. On TV with my mom and dad and my brother. And like, I mean, I don't remember a lot about it, but just like with most of the people who pitched, we would all talk about it, like, you know, just shoot the shit with my family back and forth about like, oh yeah, what do you think? Was that a good idea and whatnot? And I actually rewatched it today on Hulu. So for those listening who want to see Derek's Shark Tank pitch, it's on Hulu season 4, episode 1, I want to say. So it was nice to rewatch that and kind of, you know, and see, because I'm 23 now, and that's, you know, when you were on Shark Tank. So to see that, it's for a lot of young people. I mean, you're on the spot and they're throwing it. I remember you walk out there and Mark Cuban goes, "That was a horrible idea."
Yeah.
Horrible idea. And you just, that was like first thing out of his mouth, essentially, after your pitch. And but you ended up getting an offer from him nonetheless. But ultimately turned it down. It was what, 200 grand for a third of the company, right?
Yep.
You regret it?
That's the biggest question everyone asks. I always have, you know, no regrets, right? Like you make a decision, you move on, and that's what you do. Now, do I consider the scenarios of what would play out? Definitely, you know, definitely did. Definitely still wonder, you know, what the difference would have been. But I think the decision at the time, right, was a good decision for valuation of the company, my ownership in, you know, the idea and now sort of what we've done. If I had taken that deal, I would, based on the resource that I've desired to put into this business to excel its development and its ability to solve these problems, I'd have such a, you know, I don't think I would have as much control and have as much you know, stake in the value today if I had taken that small of a valuation compared to what the rest of the market was offering, you know, me at that time for stake in the company. So I don't regret not taking the deal, because the deal I didn't believe, and I still don't believe, it was, you couldn't for $200,000 do what we were looking to do for that valuation. We would need more capital. However, would I have loved to work with Mark? I think, you know, I really respect his mindset, you know, sort of what he's done. So absolutely. So, you know, that's something though, to me, I don't regret it, because I don't see that as not an option in the future. If at some point in time, it makes sense to still, you know, raise capital from his firm. So I look at it as just timing. You know, we were in there before we had revenue, and he wanted, you know, for where we had gotten, you know, a different valuation than others in the marketplace.
Yeah. And you know what? I think that's one thing that you did say at the very end. You're like, you know what? Just now's not the right time. Maybe somewhere down the line. And you know, if it does come to that point, maybe you'll have a different conversation with him.
Exactly.
But now, you know, so now you've done Code Checks, which is still the parent umbrella company, but you've recently, kind of embarked into Checksology, which is what you were talking to Greg about that we discussed earlier. So why don't you tell me a little bit about your pivot, that transition and all of that?
Yeah. So CoCheX is actually now an application, and our company is Checksology. And the reason we did that, so Checksology is the parent company. And the reason was, I think it was back in 2015, a silent disco company called Quiet Events in New York, it's the largest silent disco company in the country, reached out to me and said that they were lending out headphones for these massive events, checking out, you know, thousands of headphones, 3,000 headphones for these parties on beaches. And then they had to get them all back. And they were using like a claim ticket process to lend out the headphones, store people's IDs so that people would give the headphones back. Because organizing people, you know, alphabetically by last name when you're checking out 1,000 headphones takes so much time. So they're just like, we're just going to put them single file, give out claim tickets, and then they give the claim tickets back and we find them. And he used our application as is, no changes, for lending out headphones. And then we started getting into, you know, a partnership with Nike, lending out shoes for like shoe trials for Nike Run Clubs and all kinds of, you know, bag checking. And then we got into with, you know, American Express at the US Open, lending out Mophie charging cases for events. And I realized, I'm like, CoCheX is so, you know, it's so niche to the CoCheX process, but this claim process, this exchange of goods between people, right? The belonging exchange and transfer of possession for a period of time, and then expecting to get it back in the same condition or better, applies to so many different things. Bag check, valet, right? There's so many different applications, whether it's lending or storing. And our application is objective, right? Our mission is to eliminate the claim ticket. And the vision is, if we can create a process that's trusted between two people, right? Paper ticket doesn't tell me anything about what you checked in. And if you lose it, it's all on you. So the vision has always been, it doesn't matter what the belongings are that you're checking in and out. It matters about the process. Can we make this trusted? Can we make it really quick? Can we eliminate paper, make this eco-friendly, right? Can we do all these great things for this process so that two people can trust each other, a business and a customer, that whatever I exchange, right, I'm going to be able to get it back, and I can trust you that you're not going to lose it, you're not going to do something. Because the way our app works is we take pictures, right, of the items and the people, and we send you a text with the claim number instead of giving you a piece of paper. And so luggage storage was always something on our minds, right, for a long time. We always had identified, like, oh, in hotels, you know, when you check in your luggage, you get a claim ticket. And then, you know, when you want it back, you get it back. And, you know, we identified what were some of the pain points with that. Okay, so sometimes the hotels will bring your luggage up to your room, and there's a lot of times you'll get up there and your luggage isn't there yet. And once we started digging in, we're like, oh, it's because this communication between departments, like the claim ticket number has to transfer to the front desk has to write it in. When the room's ready, they then have to communicate back to the bellman knows how to take it upstairs. And there's so many points in there where, because it's manual processes of typing and writing and handing things back and forth and radioing, that if we could automate some of these processes, we could help with that guest experience of the actual, just, you know, it's a tool, right? It's just a tool to allow people to do their jobs better. And the problem we saw with the hotels, when we were focusing on nightclubs, on massive convention centers, you know, concert halls, museums, they have a real big problem. End of night, you know, everyone leaves all at the same time, long lines, a lot of lost claim tickets. In the hotels, it's more of a gradual come and go for the most part. They don't have as big of a pain point as sort of these nightclubs with people losing tickets and long lines forming for luggage storage. It was for us more, okay, the value props we provide is a better guest experience, no more paper for them, right? There was tons of value props. It's eco-friendly, right? And the value we saw was there, but it was at the time not as needed as today with COVID, right? Handing the paper back and forth makes people get, you know, the process of doing that brings people very close together, right? You have to get within 6 feet of them to hand the paper, right? And you're dealing with this procedure that back in March we identified as wasn't safe, right, with COVID. And so we thought about the industry. How is the industry going to come back? Nightclubs, concerts, right? Museums are all affected. Like, massive events are going to be the last to come back, right? So co-checking is essentially, as we think about recovery, for these massive events, are so dependent on people traveling again, people staying in hotels again, and people starting to then, you know, aggregate again and do events. And so we looked at the recovery of the industry, and we said, if we can help hotels first, right, and get people feeling safe about traveling again and staying in cities again, then the rest of our segments and our verticals will be able to recover quicker as well. So we just pivoted our focus and said, let's help hospitality and hotels, and that will help the rest of our market. Hopefully we can have a small dent there, right, to help with the process. So that's how we got there.
So I just want to be clear. So it wasn't until after COVID hit that this idea of helping out hotels that had been on your guys' mind, it's been in the strategy, but kind of tabled. Then you said, okay, now's our chance to strike with this. And at that point, you guys made the full pivot and decided we're going to focus on this, right?
Exactly. We were like, now's the time when we feel is the best. Because we also saw the hotels, and I'm curious, you know, Kyle, from your mind, nightclub owners are quick to make decisions. You know, there's not as much hierarchy, right, in those organizations. So for us, you know, getting people to try new technologies and try new things didn't take as much change management and organization from these big, you know, titans of the industry, you'll call it, that you see in sort of the hotels, right? There's a 50-50 mix of like the boutiques, independents, but, you know, let's the major players kind of dominate, you know, the market for, you know, big segments of the market. And we, you know, try to get into airports at one point, and museums, you know, even museums, they're not like it's one location, maybe five locations, right? Because convention centers, one location, casinos, one to five, you know, five, but hotels, it's like thousands for some of these big groups. So we always also just saw it as it would be hard to get in and get all the approvals for them to change, right, their process. And we actually saw this as like, wow, the hotels are, we were reading everything about how hotels now were like adopting, right? You guys were changing processes. You guys were getting creative. And I'm like, oh, this is the time to join in. They're thinking like I do, right? Now's, you know, it's a terrible situation for us all, but now is a moment to pivot energy, refocus, think creatively on how we could redo things that could then not only help short-term, but long-term. So that's kind of why we jumped in. It was like, wow, maybe now's a good time for change management and rethinking processes, you know, getting away from paper and switching. And, you know, there's a little more time right now for this planning, for this execution, where when you're busy in your day-to-days managing hotels and running hotels, you don't necessarily have the time to do that kind of planning and thinking and trying new things and testing the water. So yeah, that was sort of, you know, how we saw it. But I'd be curious, Kyle, from your side, right? Like you've been in the hotel industry. Like, what did you see as far as, you know, right when COVID struck, and like how were hotels thinking differently? And even, you know, maybe I'm wrong. I'm curious from your end, you know, as far as implementing new tech, was that something that was easier for vendors to do beforehand versus what, you know, now, you know, this is still a hypothesis for us as we're new, you know, starting in March is really when we started focusing. So I'd actually love to learn from you, Kyle, on your thoughts on that.
Yeah. And I think this is a great opportunity to kind of strategize a little bit and go back and forth. So the one thing I think you brought up some great points. Number one was that, you know, I think that March and April, right, we saw the global hotel industry shift in unison to a certain extent for probably the first time in history. Because it's never been, you know, you had the American Hotel and Lodging Association issuing their own set of cleanliness standards. Each brand had their own like clean stay for Hilton and, you know, I can't remember what Marriott's was, but all these different standards that were coming onto play for the first time, which is typically, like you said, change management is very difficult a lot of the times for the hotel and hospitality industries. One thing that I do want to mention in case you weren't already aware is with hotels, actually 90% of hotels are actually small businesses. So you have these brands, right, which do have thousands of locations. But hotel brands have gone very asset light. They don't really own very many of their assets. So the owners and operators of these properties are usually independent small business owners. So when you're approaching a brand, right, like say you're going to Marriott, for example, and they more than likely they own hotels without a doubt, and they can implement those changes. But the biggest thing they could do would be to do a sweeping brand standard for all their franchisers and say, hey, you need to implement this technology. That's a tough one though.
Yes. Yeah. And that's what, so you're absolutely right. There's the ownership, right? There's the hotel management firms that kind of oversee, you know, the management of these assets that are owned, you know, sometimes, you know, soup to nuts owned and operated, but sometimes you have these tiers, right? The hotel management companies, and then the brands sometimes are the operators, but most of the, it's just the licensing, right? The brand, the standards, sort of getting the sales, right? So, but what we've seen, like you said, is that, that they have brand standards, procedures, like you have to use Opera, you have to use hot sauce, right? You like they have recommended, they have mandated, right, vendors, right, that you have to use to keep those sort of procedures standard across all your experiences from a Marriott to a Marriott, from a Hyatt to a Hyatt, right, from a Four Seasons to a Four Seasons. And yeah, I mean, as doers, we were like, independent hotels is where we need to start, because we can go from the ground up, and we were trying to identify the organizations where decision making could happen quickly. But we took a strategy from both angles. Let's also talk to the brands, because like you said, they were issuing these COVID plans. Like, here's how we're changing our procedures. And they were putting these publicly, you know, so everyone could see, here's what we're doing to keep you as guests safe, right? We're changing our check-in experience, right? Like the check-in to this and that, your rooms, how we clean them to this and that. And we were seeing them talking about how they were going contactless and, you know, doing all these things. And this was coming from the brands. So we saw this as a time to, yeah, start the conversations with the brands, but also, you know, to the Lowe's of the, you know, Lowe's hotels of the world, right? We went to them, and then we also just went direct, right? Direct to the GMs, direct to the directors of front office and directors of guest experience at the hotel. We wanted to talk to everyone to understand everything, but you're right. When an assumption I had prior to really diving into the hotels was totally, you know, it was just a high level assumption or a hypothesis that once we got to work and got into the industry, we learned so much. And yeah, I'm, please keep telling me, right? Like, what else do I need to know?
Yeah. It sounds like you like have already grasped like a lot of the nuances that, and kind of the politics, if you will, of hotels, because there's so many different structures and hierarchies and things like that. And, you know, for you to be hitting the ground and speaking with like Greg, for example, right, at the time he was the assistant director of rooms at the hotel, all that was super valuable. The thing that, you know, I will say is, now, as I'm sure you're aware, a lot's changed since March, right? And it's changed for the worse, to be frank. Like, a recent survey by the American Hotel and Lodging Association says that in 6 months, and this was like just last week, very new, 6 months without any relief, big relief from Congress, 71% of hotels will be foreclosed on in the United States, and 31% in the next 3 months without any relief. So you have hotels that are defaulting on their debt service, cannot pay payroll for the skeleton crews that they do have working. And you know, I feel like for a lot of people, they're in survival mode. So sometimes the last thing you want to do is think about, I can't even get my rooms clean right now, and I'm dealing with all this. I don't even want to welcome another idea, because people are so overwhelmed. I don't know if you've had, if you want to disclose, if you've had any challenges with hotel operators as the pandemic has kind of progressed a little bit.
Kyle, what you just described is us as our biggest challenge, right? So everything is so spot on that you just said, right? Like the industry, right? And not just, you know, the hotel industry. I mean, us as a primary, like our bread and butter flagship product, Cocheck, was nightclubs, museum. Like, think about the nightclubs and their, you know, cash flow, right? Like, nightclubs, museums, convention centers, all of them, anywhere where people aggregate and travel, right? They're all dealing with these similar situations as hotels and hospitality. I mean, yeah, the debt situation is crazy. And yeah, what it's doing to the staff and the workforce is it's awful, right? And even with my company, it's, you know, we had to put together a, you know, a COVID plan where we all took reductions just to keep everyone on staff, because our revenues, you know, went from, you know, down from, let's say we were making, you know, $250,000 a month down to like $15,000 a month from just usage, right? Like it, that's how it kind of looked, right? For us and you know, for hotels, it's all this same, and it's just an awful situation. And so when you say like they're going to close, they're going to go bankrupt, it, yeah, these things are going to happen, whether it's the 70% or 30%. That's how awful things are, right? This is going to happen. Now, what I see is they're going to go bankrupt. Ownership's going to change. Deals are going to be done. But those properties in a year, two, you know, 5 years from now, what else can you do with that massive building there, you know, other than people staying in it, right? Like at some point, it's going to have to recover, right? Like COVID's going to end and people, there's still 8 billion people, right? They're going to want to start traveling again. They're going to want to start doing these things again. So the question is how long, right? It might be 5 years, 10 years for that recovery. But I do feel right now we're all in this awful situation and it sucks, right? There's no other way to put it. And so now I guess, you know, yeah, I'm looking and you're right. A lot of people's heads are down and it's like, sort of like, you know, this sucks, right? And you're right. They're like, I don't have time to think about this. I'm just trying to, you know, some of them are like, I don't even know if I'm going to have a job in a month, right? And we get on these calls, right? And it's like, you know, do they even have the hope and the desire to try to change things right now and try to think about that recovery? Or, and this is what we're dealing with based on the different cultures we've seen at these different hotels, right? Is some of them are very hopeful, right? Some people, and sometimes it's not even the culture of the company. Sometimes it's the individual we talk to are just hopeful, you know, people that realize there's nothing I personally can do about COVID hit. It's here, right? It creates a health, it's a pandemic, right? And so, and this is, you know, how I look at life. There's two things you can do. You can put your head down and, you know, let it just consume you, right? Or you can think about, okay, what can I do right now to be happy, to add value in this situation? The situation is what it is. How do I get out of it? How do I make a situation, not just for myself, but my team or my company or, you know, my family, to improve the situation? And you hear this analogy all the time. The times when most innovation happens is in times of war, right? Because you're scared, you're uncomfortable, you have to think, you have to do things differently. It's a time when you have to progress or you're out, right? And war is like the worst example. But to me, a pandemic is a similar analogy to what you'll see through this pandemic is people getting creative, people being innovative, people having to think differently and change happening. And it's hard. That's the thing. It's really hard. And it's going to be hard for everybody. So yeah, it's, you know, it's a dilemma, you know. But we've definitely seen it in talking to people. That's been our biggest problem. And so just trying to identify the ones who are hopeful, who believe and realize like this is a time, like if I'm going to add value, where can I do it? And they see that this is one piece that, you know, down to like the directors, right, of Fernrock, or the assistant directors, or, you know, even, you know, Bellman, you know, for the Bellman that are still staffed, they're realizing like, okay, this is the time I have. I'm not checking in so much luggage nonstop. This is the time I have to think about the process and change things for these guests that come back. And I'm willing to give you my thoughts. So yeah, it's like, you have to find the right people who are hopeful, whose heads are up, and the organizations that, you know, have, that are thinking about innovation, that have prioritized, you know, the staff being there to, and to take on these projects. And that's difficult to identify.
Yeah, you know, I think all that is right. You see that there's organizations and there's people who are so traumatized. As an industry, I would say probably traumatized would be an overarching word that we can use to describe the state of affairs right now. But there are people who are optimistic and powering through it and trying to make the best out of it. Now, I want to kind of, maybe we can walk through like what the process is right for Checksology right now. So let's do the hotel scenario. If you wouldn't mind just walking us through it, maybe I can identify if there's anything that could be tweaked or improved or anything like that. Like let's talk about the experience from start to finish, if from guest to bellman, et cetera.
Yeah. Yeah. So guest, you know, gets out of the car, they have luggage, right? And depending on, you know, if you're a five-star hotel versus, you know, it depends on the hotels, you know, what they do. Sometimes the hotel will take your luggage right from that point and bring it, you know, through the entire journey for you all the way up to your room and into your room. Sometimes you do it yourself, right? You just kind of bring your luggage up. And so the first time, we'll go to a simple one. You land in your destination at 6 a.m. You get to the hotel. This is pre-COVID, right? And it was a busy holiday, you know, weekend. You get to the hotel really early and they're like, your room isn't available yet. You know, it'll be available at 11, you know, go have breakfast. And that's when they start, you know, oh, do you mind if I store my luggage? Absolutely. You know, what's your name? Right. They then decide, they start to write things on a piece of paper. What's your last name? You know, and then they start to stick bags, right? Blah, blah, blah. And then they rip off another piece of paper and they go, here you go. Right. And so they hand you the paper. So we identified, you know, a lot of these hotels are writing that information on two times, one on the ticket that goes with the bags and then one on the ones that they give to the guest, right? Because then it goes to the front desk, right? So we were looking at that process and like, okay, they're writing things down, they're tagging, you know, things, and then they're giving customers a ticket that's important, that ticket. We need that back, right? To know where their stuff is. So our process is a guest comes up to the hotel and they get to that same point. And we go, hi, welcome to the hotel. What's your phone number? We'll send you a text with your claim number. And they just give the phone number and they get a text. And then we have these reusable tags that we just tap onto the bags and they have numbers on them. And then the camera on the app just takes a picture and it pulls that number off the bag. So, oh, you checked in 56. And so what's happening is we're now taking pictures of the luggage when you're tagging them. And so, and then you store them and the guest gets the text and then you can then search them by phone number. That phone number, you know, you could associated with the guest's, you know, reservation to pull all this other information and vice versa. You, instead of looking by phone number, you can just ask for their name, right, with the integration and then pre-populate that. So that's the process. Is for the guests, they just come up, they hand their luggage over and they either provide their name, which you were asking before, and then you guys were writing down, but now they don't have to get a piece of paper, right? They get a text, welcome to the hotel, here's your claim number, enjoy your stay, right? And they go on their way. And what's nice is when they come back, the queuing system, right? Before they'd have to hand a piece of paper to the front desk or front desk would have to call, get the luggage ready. With the technology, it allows for this communication and queues, right? You can queue items. You know, a bellman can say, I got this one and this one. They could go grab two items and bring them to the front, right? So now the communication between departments is all automated. And it just makes it easy to kind of proactively know what you have to do next instead of reactively by creating these, you know, cues for tasks that need to happen. So for the guests, it's just a text and then they come back and they just provide their name and then you find it. And then, you know, the crazy thing to me, what I actually learned that was very different from code checking is I call it Tetris. Luggage storage is Tetris. You're putting things in this back room and in code checking, it's easy to keep things sequential. With luggage storage, you put it in, especially on busy days, you're putting them in like whatever slot is available for these five bags or four bags as guests are checking out and, you know, guests are checking in. And then being able to find them becomes very difficult, especially for these big properties. So, you know, a big thing we were doing was helping with organization back there. So you could still do the Tetris because you have limited space, but now, you know, you take a picture of the shelf and it associates that shelf number to where the bags are. So the number on the bag doesn't matter as much to which shelf it's on. So we've been learning so much on just how to make organization easier, how to make the process faster for the guest, how to make it more trusted by taking pictures of the items. So if there's ever a discrepancy or issue, it can be handled. And then we automate the communication, you know, by integrating with the hotel systems, right? To just make that easy. So there's less typing and less writing. So if that helps.
Right. So I just want to, the one part of it. So the bellman would have to have a device. So in this scenario, there's no kiosk, right? Because so it's on a cell phone of sorts that would be issued to the bellman or whoever, the doorman, and they have reusable Checksology tags that you can just click on to the luggage, and then you're with the device. You have the guest phone number, and you're taking a picture of the bag with the tag on it. You have the number there, so. Because if you take a picture of like a black suitcase and there's hundreds of black suitcases. So at least there's still a number on there, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So it'd be number, they'd see the white tag that was slapped onto the handle. And when you take the picture, it's like when you scan a check, right? When you deposit a check, it pulls all the numbers off the check. We use the same OCR technology. When you take a picture of the bag, it looks for the big number that's on the tag and pulls it off. So just the picture taken itself pulls the number off. And yeah, you got it dead on. You know, from there, you now have this visual picture that, you know, they might be black, but like if there was like ever a discrepancy, you can also look for where that bag is, right, in the back room. But yeah, for the staff, you know, this was another interesting thing. Like Four Seasons, for example, you know, iPod touches or iPhones were distributed to the cleaners to use hot sauce, for example, right? And now Bellman are starting to get these devices, not just for, you know, transport requests or luggage storage requests, but also for communication and different things. So we saw this as also a time like, okay, finally, you know, the Bellman are starting to get issued these devices, so we can be another, you know, another tool for them on that device. But yeah, they do need a device. And the tag itself is, that was a fun process, was working on the tag, because it's very different. Like on coats, you put the tags on the hangers, but with luggage, you know, we were like solving the problems down to like how you guys, you know, you have these like little strings on these bags that you have to wrap them around, put them through, you rip these stickers off, you put them on the extra bags. And it was like time consuming to do this like whole thing, sticker, 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 rip, you know, put it through. So we actually, the idea came from your door tags. When you want your room not to be cleaned,
Do not disturb sign.
Yeah. So yeah, what we did is we made mini versions of those, and instead of there being like a little gap in between where it comes on, so it can go onto the doorknob, we kind of close it off so it snaps. So it's still that same piece of plastic, but when you tap it down on a luggage storage handle, it snaps around it and it's thin. Cause we were like, okay, they still have to carry these reusable tags around and keep them in their pocket like they kept the tickets. So we needed them to still be thin and small. We didn't want like a bulky thing that these, you know, staff have to hold. So now they're just walking around with an iPod and these little reusable tags. But it was fun to like, you know, talk to the teams and like come up with the ideas of the fastest way to tag a bag, right? Like do all this cool stuff. So that was kind of cool to see in a time of COVID, people were still having fun on the job, like trying to solve problems with us, you know, and hopefully it was like a little bright part of their day, like doing something different. But yeah, it was
it's cool that you guys made it a priority to have boots on the ground at the hotels and really, really try and understand. Like, I respect the hell out of you guys for doing that.
I went and stored luggage in, you know, multiple hotels, Hilton, Sheraton's, the District Hotel, like Ace Hotel. So I went to, and physically was like, can I work with you guys for the entire day from 8 a.m.? I wanted to deal with like the Saturday shifts, you know, the morning rush on Sundays, right? The evening departures. And I learned so much from the bell, you know, like these teams, like the front desk teams, the bell teams, of what really happens in real life. Cause you hear things from sometimes like, this is the procedures in quotes that you're supposed to do, but here's the hacks, right? Like here's the tricks that actually happen. And when we aggregated all of these things, it really helped our product team like come up with true solutions that would really speed things up, you know, just do these things that we thought were super important. It was all about speed, it was all about ease. And then ultimately it was all about for the guests not being responsible for holding the ticket, right? So yeah, we're still going, right? It's like, we're still trying to learn, and COVID makes it hard because you don't deal with those massive crowds coming in. Like, you know, we haven't been able like we did, you know, cause we were already learning with Hilton and Midtown in October is when we kind of started with them for their check rooms at their convention areas. And that's when we started to observe the lines, like literally right before. And that's when like the idea sparked, and that was kind of our in. So we had a little bit, but to have to pivot, like we were like, cause we learned a lot from watching at, you know, it's a 1500, you know, room hotel. Like their Sunday mornings were crazy. It was like 800 bags would be stored, in the bell, you know, behind the bell closet in this massive storage room. So we at least got a little bit of time to learn from some of them beforehand, but it still wasn't a priority. We were like, oh, this is an interesting process. And that's when we learned about the Tetris and everything. And so we kind of backlogged it and like, okay, at some point we want to tackle this. But what COVID did was like, okay, eventually we need to solve for that problem. But now with COVID, it's not about volume. It's about safety. It's about, you know, different things. And so our roadmap kind of pivoted and changed in priority based on current situation, but thinking for the future, for 5 years from now, when those situations will come back.
And I think that's like very insightful and smart of you to be thinking long-term, because like, granted, like your business obviously is a, you know, is cause and effect relationship of what's going on with people gathering, like you mentioned, and traveling and the hospitality industry essentially. But I think that there are some things that you can do now to help prepare you for when these transactions of hotels are going to take place, right? With hotels failing on their debt service, we're going to see a lot of transactions, maybe new ownership who's ready to kind of reinvent the wheel a little bit. So I think it's a great opportunity to get ahead of it. Now, do you mind if I ask you a couple questions about
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I have plenty of time. So I'm excited to talk.
I want to try and provide you as much value as possible.
Yes, please.
Does your product have any reporting features on it? Like any reports that like you can see that Jim checked this many bags today or anything along those lines?
Yeah, we keep the PII, like the personal identifiable information, private, right? But as far as the transactional journey and history, we know, you know, how long your bag's been stored, who stored it, you know, we know all the ins and outs of, you know, the time it took to check in the item even. Like, you know, we're trying to improve, you know, because it's technology, we can track all these data points throughout the process and aggregate it and report it, whereas with the paper you couldn't. So, you know, we have the basic transactional reports, when the item was checked in, when it was checked out, if it was left behind, right? So we know how many items are left behind, how long they were left behind, you know, and like it makes that process for the bellman. They were having to manually log all this stuff, right? And it was crazy. So yeah, we have all kinds of transactional reporting and then ways to analyze that information.
Yeah, because I guess like the easy, like the hotel industry traditionally, right, like we kind of mentioned, is so slow to adopt technology in general because of all these different owners and management companies and brands and all of the variables involved. But the fastest way to get a hotel to adopt new technology is if you can help them with their number one biggest financial pain point, which is labor costs that are rising rapidly and have been, that's kind of the right now. And even before COVID was the end all be all. Labor cost is rising. It's getting more expensive. So to be able to maybe integrate somehow, like, and I don't know if it's exactly this way now or not, but to be able to say like, Jim, the bellman checked this many bags. So you can see, okay, from, and then on a bigger scale, if there were three bellmen there, the entire bell team from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. checked 100 bags, from 2 p.m. to 4 p.m. they checked zero bags, et cetera. So you can help them with their labor management and productivity, which will be, I think that's a big selling point for ownership, will be that labor management part of it as well.
Yeah. And, you know, some of it is just performance, right? Who can check in the most amount of items without making, you know, with the least amount of mistakes, right? So you can evaluate volume in a busy time, you know, who your performers are, who, you know, there's certain things you can see with the technology, but you won't know necessarily about the guest experience that they provided, because sometimes you have to talk more and that slows it down, right? So we do have pieces of information that absolutely can help with that. The way we've actually seen it being used to the best of its ability is the Museum of Modern Art, for example. They were staffing things very flat staff is what I call it. Like every Friday, it's this amount of people from this time to this time. And then you'd see these lines build up, right? At random times, right? Like, but once we started looking at the data over and over again, we started to realize, wait, why don't you take in these dead times when you're checking no items, take some of these staff hours, remove them from there, and give more hours to people at these times when there's more, you know, rushes and stuff. And so what it did is it helped them just with management of labor and putting it to the right places. And sometimes, yeah, reducing it if it was over, you know, where it needed to be. So yeah, it was like kind of, it's kind of cool to see these analysis of like per staff head, how many items are being checked per hour. And that helps you kind of with decision making of not only shifts and hours and stuff like that. So making decisions based on those insight is just helpful from whether you're trying to reduce costs or you're trying to make your costs more efficient in their outputs. So yeah.
Right. And I think that's the name of the game for owners specifically. So that's like, I think a huge thing that it sounds like you've already solved that pain point in and of itself for the hotel industry, especially as these auxiliary front service positions like bellman and doorman are going to be probably take the longest to come back at a lot of the mid-scale hotels because they're, you know, they're not, don't want to say they're not essential, but they're not they're not essential to the guests coming in, spending the money and staying the night at the hotel. So to be able to kind of have that ready to go as they start to come back. So when these bellmen are there, their labor is being scrutinized accordingly, because that's exactly what the owners are going to want to do. The other couple things here, I don't know, have you heard on the road when you've been at these hotels, have you heard of a program called Kibsu?
Oh yeah. Yeah. Kibsu is for the texting, right? And just for the management of tasks we've definitely heard of Kibsu.
Gotcha. Cause the only thing that I could consider maybe off the top of my head that maybe an objection that you may come across would be, well, why are we going to send a guest a text through Checksology with one phone number and one point of contact when we also have a separate system with Kibsu that it would be almost maybe confusing for the guests if they received one text from one number about your bag and then another text saying, how is your room, from a different number. And then maybe you text the bellman at midnight wanting to know where the nearest ice machine is, but that bellman has gone home. You know what I'm saying? You can see where that might be an issue if there's confusion on the guest part in terms of how to communicate and with whom, and is there too many options?
Absolutely. And you know, that's why, you know, another time when I looked back in 2017 at the hotels, I was looking at the integrations between systems like Hot Sauce and Kibsu and Zingle and Opera, like how easy it was to integrate and pass information back and forth. So like, you know, with Kibsu and Zingle, right, these are like technologies that are now more open. They have APIs where we can integrate, because for us, like, we just want a guest to get a text that's like, here's your claim number, here's your proof. It doesn't matter what number it's coming from. So if the hotel wants it to come from one number, then that's an easy, you know, you do an integration. If they're fine with it coming from two numbers, integrations, there's always a cost associated. So if they're fine with it coming from two numbers, it being very clear in that text message that this is your claim ticket, you know, do not respond. Like, you just have to be very clear with what it is, right? And, you know, and that's what's awesome about tech is there's choices, right? You can kind of decide what's more important to you, saving a little money or doing the integration. So, you know, what's interesting to me right now, right? One of our big things we've realized, right? Before COVID, the cost of our system was very comparable to the replacement cost of what you pay for paper, right? And what we realized is, like, in hotels, that piece of paper costs anywhere from 7 cents to 25 cents, right? That you're giving to the guests with the stickers on it, right? And so we were like, oh, okay, you know, for hotels, the features we build in, it's going to be a replacement cost. And like, let's try to make it 5%, 10% less. So on the annual budget, it actually stopped buying paper in bulk. This is a replacement cost. Send guest texts instead. But what we realized with COVID, and this was what was so interesting, is like, hey, we have a backstock of tickets and, you know, money is tight. Like, we're not going to invest in new technology right now. So, you know, these are like these new challenges that we'd never faced before. Like, most people will run out of those tickets pretty soon and they'll have to reorder. But now, right there, like, we have these tickets. So what we did was we said, oh, great. You know, if you want to get rid of those tickets, don't use the reusable tag, you know, don't buy reusable tags for now. Just don't give the bottom to the customer, and our app actually scans those. So run out of those, use the app. And what we'll do is, whatever you have left in stock, we'll give you a free amount of that stock to just go paperless, you know, go contactless. Don't give that thing to guests. This is like our recovery plan. We'll help you. And then once you're out of those, re-up instead of, you know, with paper, just keep using us, right? And we're doing a price match right now for anyone who signs up within the next 3 months. You can you know, if you sign up now, whatever you're paying for your claim ticket, we guarantee a minimum 5 to 40% savings on what you would pay for, right, for when you reorder. So like, now's our time, because we're new, we're validating the price point, the value proposition, but we're trying to make it a no-brainer. There's no costs, right, associated with starting. Get through COVID, get through your current situation. Don't pay a penny until you were going to be paying a penny before, when you would need to get more paper. So like, we've had to be so creative now with sort of all these different things. And that's what's crazy about COVID, is it's awful from like a, you know, situation of, it's just very uncomfortable, very scary, very, you know, just like a terrible situation, but it forces people to think differently about their careers, their life, their processes, what they're doing. And for an entrepreneur like myself, who's always trying to innovate, people being in that mindset, right? Like, it's the perfect time for us to make an impact, to have something change. And, you know, we've actually hired we brought in 2 staff from the hotel industry. They're now, you know, because I wanted to get more, you know, internal experience on, you know, on what the hotel experience is. So we brought in someone from Chicago and someone from Nashville that had been in the hotel industry, you know, and I was looking for people that worked from the front desk to management to, you know, where they got into sales or operations. I was looking for someone who had a journey through the entire experience to come in and give us these insights. So like, we found 2 people that have always been very passionate about tech and have always wanted to they love hospitality, but they're really fascinated by tech and have always wanted to come into a tech company. And so we took this as an opportunity, because of all the furloughs and everything, to find some new team members that can actually help us think long-term and get through this. So like, you know, there's opportunity out there for everybody. It's hard to find, right? But it's moments that like, where you could think differently. It's maybe a time to, you know, do a different role or pivot or try something else or gain a skill, right? Like right now, that will long-term advance you as a person or you in your career, right? Or you just like, it's a time to explore and think differently, and it's going to be uncomfortable. And that's the thing, is like, once you realize this sucks and this is going to be uncomfortable, but how do I make the best of it? That's when you kind of open up your mind to the opportunity out there that exists. And so, yeah, man, it's crazy.
I love your optimism on it. And I love the deal that you're doing, the shift that you're making to overcome the objections of the hoteliers. And I just want to make sure that I understand, right? So you're, you know, like you mentioned, with a check, it pulls the numbers off, like when you deposit a check online. So you can use the existing paper ticket infrastructure that you have, as long as you implement the technology. And then once you run out of those tickets, you'll basically have them reorder the ones that you guys have, the reusable ones, right?
Yeah. And one of the things, you know, some people really like their tickets. It's all change management, right? So like, some of these bellmen have been doing the same thing for 30 years, right? For 40 years, and they're used to their process. So introducing a new tech, you don't want to just overload someone with a new process all at once. Like, it's keep them comfortable with certain things, but focus on the things that matter most. So for us, it was the bellman, you know, the bellman or the front desk agent coming close to someone and physically handing them a piece of paper right now. Is like, we wanted to keep that 6-foot distance. So the way we built the tech was, the best way to take the picture is from this far away, right? When you get the guest information and their picture, right, the camera's focused so that, you know, you maintain, otherwise it doesn't take a good picture unless they're 6 feet away. And so we were like, that's what matters most, just not giving them that bottom piece of the ticket. So, you know, how you tag the bag, yeah, we came up with some cool ways to make it better, make it more eco-friendly, but, you know, we're hoping that over time you'll adapt to different things, because the problem we have with the tickets right now is the numbers are so small, they're so hard to read, right? Like on the existing ticket. So like, when you go to the back room and the stickers fall off, and, you know, we just saw some ideas to help with, one, the reusable tags, just keep it so you don't have to buy paper. And what's crazy is like, some of these stickers, these 25-cent paper tickets, if someone has one bag, you're throwing away so much paper, right? There's like 8 other stickers on that luggage storage tag that right, just goes in the trash.
Exactly.
Yeah. And it's like such a waste. And so like, to us, we were like, okay, if you want to use stickers instead of, because, you know, one thing is like, the stickers are fat, you know, the tap and reusable tags are great, but you have to store differently, because, you know, now what's more important is what shelf you're storing on, not the ID you give to the bag. So like a lot of people are like, I still want to keep things sequential. I don't deal with the Tetris situation. We don't have that issue. So I'm like, we like the stickers. And so what we do is we just have big numbered stickers, one, you know, to whatever, and they just stick the bags quicker and they don't need this massive big ticket with, you know, all these different little pieces that they have to peel and rip. And so, yeah, we're still trying to figure out all the best ways to tag quickly, and keep things very easy to find. But yeah, this has been pretty cool. It's just like learning from, you know, everyone who's actually doing it right now. And it sucks because it was so much more fun when I got to go in there and do it myself with them and talk to them. And now, you know, we're jumping on Zooms and we're like, okay, what is it? Or can we sit in the lobby? You know, like, cause you know, with all the new protocols, it's like, you want to keep everyone safe. So I'm just so excited for things to start getting back to normal so we can go in there again and have those. I love the in-person experience, you know, with people as much as Kyle, you're great on the Zoom right now, but I'd love to see you in person, you know, like let's go out and, you know, and talk and like observe things and touch things and, you know, kind of like work the process. So it is challenging, but yeah, it's definitely been fun to just kind of work on this for hotels.
Yeah. I mean, it's and I love your sentiment, right? Because it's, that job in hotels in general is very much a physical, tangible sort of environment to be in. That's what we love about it. So being able to be there in person certainly makes all the difference. Now there's another thing, hopefully you don't mind. There's a union aspect of it. I don't know if you've encountered this
yet. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So first thing I thought of was, man, there's, especially when you talk about these bellmen who've been there for 30, 40 years, typically they're going to be in a heavily unionized environment, like in New York, San Francisco, or Chicago, where it's tough to make any sort of substantial changes there.
Yeah, let's talk about that, because that was something, I'm glad you brought that up. I totally forgot about that. So yeah. Hilton, right, was our first client to use, Hilton Midtown was our first ones to use it for not just check rooms, but you know, luggage storage and their union. And, you know, we went in there like, oh, this is going to be just like the museums or conventions. Like, yeah. Like there's always some people, you know, some people that are scared of change or just scared of technology and don't want to change for many different reasons that you deal with when we go into different sites and train people. But what we realized when we went into the hotels, we were met with sort of like, uh-oh, what does this mean? You know, it was like, this is different. And, you know, I don't know whether it's the union or what it was. Yeah, you know, I don't want to get into that politics, but we definitely, you know, when we first trained, we went there, we trained, we left, and no one used the technology. And I'm like, why isn't this getting usage every day? Like they bought it. Like, and so I went back and, you know, I didn't do the first training, but I personally was like, I don't understand why we're not getting usage. It's, you know, it seems like such a good win for the Hilton and their problems with these queues and these lines at the end of these conventions. And so I went and I asked the, you know, the buyer, you know, the person who purchased it, I'm like, how's it going? They're like, oh, you know, it's a great idea, but it's just not for us. It's just, you know, it doesn't work for our staff. And I said, oh, I'm like, do you mind if I come and talk to them and observe? And what I realized was it was just that a lot of them were scared to, they didn't want to change. They liked their process. They didn't want to have to learn something new. Because they didn't understand. And what I realized is because they didn't understand why, like, why do I have to do this? It's not in my contract, or, you know, I don't have to use technology, or, you know, but once I started to talk to them and I'm like, well, you know, why don't you want to use it? Like, do you not like it? And you know, from, oh, it's slower. Right. I'm like, well, let me see you do it. And, you know, they just weren't trained right. They didn't use it the way it was meant for, or, you know, oh, well, you know, I just like the paper process. It just works for me. And so what I had to do is just kind of start to learn, like observe their, I'm like, let me see you do it with paper. Let me see how it works. Why you think it's faster. Right. And I'd sit with them for a couple hours and learn, and then ultimately try to figure out what do they care about? And do we actually have a solution? And I realized very quickly is there was a lot of places where absolutely we were slower. Like, you know, we had to go back to the drawing board, and I learned from them. And, you know, and there were things that, like, I also realized that weren't communicated early on that were actually benefits. Like they were making a whole lot, the ones that were using it right on one end were making a whole lot more tip, because a lot of people, you know, don't have cash, and we have ways to take tip, you know, like digitally.
Dude, yeah, like, huge. That's,
yeah, like, because, yeah, a lot of people just don't have cash on them. And so I was seeing the ones that were using the system, we just counted the tips. And I'm like, look how much money. And once these, you know, other, oh, they made that much tip, you know, like that to them to, you know, to the buyer wasn't as important, but to the staff was so important. And so we're like, okay, we need to maximize how easy it is for them to get tip and the experience, right? Guests are more likely to tip, what they'll have cash, they'll tip, but even just like a new digital experience for the, like, that's like, oh, no ticket. That's it. You know, it's a more high-end experience. So they were just tipping because it's something different. And so I focused all the energy on like, okay, guys, our objective is let's give these guests such a cool experience that they tip more than normal. And let's give them the ability to tip, not just cash, but if they don't have cash and they feel weird, you know, let's see if we can get them to tip after the fact, if they didn't tip right there, cause it was awkward. And that became one of our main objectives now for that user, that them being the bellman, right? The check, you know, the ones checking the items who, you know, for them is so important in their job, and, you know, among other things, right? And there was so many, like, we just made a list, things we're not winning, things we are, how do we maximize the things we are, and how do we solve the things we're not? And what I realized is, you know, they take more handholding because of some of them don't even have iPhones or digital phones, right? Like, and you know, a lot of them are just, you know, whether they were just cross-armed at first looking down like, oh, I can't, you know, this, I can't do this, I'm not going to be able to. But when you kind of like, hey, I'll work with you, let me just sit here and let's just do it together a bunch. And once it became muscle memory, they figured it out, right? It was just like me teaching my grandma how to use FaceTime during COVID. You know, I took a lot of patience on my end, but after she got over the hurdle, and it was hard for her, you know, she was getting so frustrated trying to figure it out. But once she did, how it opened up her world right now, being stuck in a home right now, not being able to see her grandkids and her family, being able to know how to use FaceTime has just changed her world right now. And, you know, like, she's so amazed by the technology and what it does, but yeah, the adoption is hard, right? And it's just like anything in life, like if it's not something you're used to or accustomed to, it's going to be harder. So, you know, that we just learned it's going to take a lot more work to onboard, to educate, to get through that hurdle, but it's totally possible. Now I go back to Hilton, you know, when I went back to Hilton a couple of months after doing, and I went there for a week every night, you know, until I talked to every single one, and going back there now, they're like, oh, Derek, what's going on? I love the system. You know, like, it's so great. I'm making so much more tip. Oh, I look at what I learned. Look. And like, now I'm getting so much more feedback. Like, can you do this? Because now they're actual, once they got the muscle memory, their feedback actually becomes a lot more valuable for what we need to tweak, right, in the process with our process, right? It's one to compare it to the old process, but once they got into it, we learned even more, right? And that was what was exciting. It's like they were giving us ideas and I'm just excited to be able to do that with a much more global group, because, you know, what I'm learning is every hotel has adapted different processes and different ways that they interact with the guests and do things. So it's fun. It's fun road ahead for us.
Yeah. Derek, I love you, man. Like, that story of like you actually, because here's the thing with the union labor and these tenured associates in hotels, like the problem is in most cases, and it's a sad reality, is that a lot of times the management at these large hotels, their front office managers, their directors, they don't have the time nor the patience most of the time to go over there and try and do it. Or the mentality that they have, unfortunately, is that they'll never get, just like you experienced, right? Our staff just didn't adapt well to it, giving up, checked out, because those bellmen are never going to change. We're just going to ignore it. It's a huge problem. We're not going to change it. But you were able to make it work for them. And that's, I think, such a success story that, like, for me, right? Like, you know, I don't know what you had already known. So I'm like, here's some objections that I kind of just thought of off the dome. And even for me, I'm putting myself in the mindset of having a team of bellmen, and you've sold me on the idea, in the sense that one of my biggest issues when dealing with a unionized bell team is when they're not making money, they stop giving good service. And that's just, I'm not even trying to talk shit on them or whatever. Like, it's true, because they become demoralized. When they're not making good tips, they stop giving good service. And the management teams historically can be very much just like a child who's just gone astray. Well, they're never going to learn, never going to change. but they've been forgotten about by the managers focusing on the front desk or being in the back office, and they feel forgotten. They know that they're making less money now than they did 10 years ago or even 5 years ago. So to be able to, the not only the pain point of the guest, but the pain point of the bellman, because those guys are some of the most dedicated hotel staff that are out there doing a lot of hard work and servicing the guests, but they have been forgotten about and in some cases abandoned. So to hear that you made it a priority to get them on board with it, and then you built a friendship with them, is truly heartwarming, man. And that that level of hospitality that is the key to post COVID ramping up your business model. I'm telling you right now.
Yeah.
Do that every single time. Build a dedicated team. Get those people that you hired from the hotel industry and come up with some sort of field training program that's consistent, and they can go in there and be empathetic toward the bellman, especially these big hotels, these tenured bellmen. That's your key to winning, man. I'm telling you, that's beautiful, because there are hotel teams a lot of times forgotten about. I'm honestly.
That's great advice, you know, because one thing we're always, because it's a cost, right? The time, I mean, it was hard work. I'd work during the day, and at 5 o'clock, I'd go there and work till midnight if it was an event at night, or I'd go there early in the morning at 6 a.m., right? And work the morning rush. And so, you know, putting that program together, it's great advice, because as you were saying that, I was thinking like, okay, that's a cost, right? And then would I have to increase my prices to cover that cost? Who would pay for that cost? You know, how would I do that? And then I started to think about sort of that last part of my conversation, how much I learned from the product side, that if I could train the reps from the hotels, not to just, you know, get over this hump by talking to them, but how to report what the bellmen are saying to the product team, it becomes killing two birds with one stone, right? So not only are we onboarding, but we're learning, and can I feed that now back to the product team in an organized, aggregated way to get better information, so that, because we have a product team that goes and does that, right? Like, but they do sample set, you know, they don't have the same touch points as the sales reps. And yeah, I mean, this is a good, yeah, time to pivot. I love it.
The keys are going to be, because again, it's when you're giving them a new experience, right? So when the bellman is on stage in the lobby and it's like, oh, this is cool, I've never experienced as a guest before. No ticket? Are you serious? Like, I know the reaction that you saw from those guests. Like, I can see it. And it's
the wow factor, right? And then they tip. Yeah.
Like, no ticket? Okay. Like, this is cool.
I got a text. Oh, cool. Yeah.
Right. So there's the experience of fresh, it's new, it's innovative. The guests can subconsciously feel like the hotel is invested in their experience and kind of leading the charge, so to speak. But again, that sentiment of the bellman will 100% be happier, more alive, more vibrant, giving better service, being more hospitable if they know that they're making more money and it's just flowing. Like, bellmen hate being bored and standing around doing nothing. So, and then if you can have like some sort of case study where, like, since implementing this technology and your program being on the ground and field training them for a certain period of time, then their guest service scores have increased by a certain amount, because then you can, that hotel can take those scores and in turn drive their daily rate. Even if they can drive their rate a dollar a night more, think about the cost is going to be blown away. If they can go up on TripAdvisor rankings because of their service, it will be a no-brainer to take on your technology at their property. Like, I see a huge winner, and just by you keep going and being boots on the ground and really thinking about the bellman experience, the guest experience, I think it's going to be great. And I know it might be slow right now because of the devastation, but keep your eye on the prize, bro. Like, I see it.
Awesome.
It's going to be good.
Kyle, you got me excited now. I'm like, I've got to create this program for once things come back, for how to onboard. And I love it. Yeah. And this has been a great, great conversation, Kyle. Thanks for having me. I do have to run to.
Yeah,
to
I know. Meeting, I know, but we went a little late. I appreciate you staying on.
And, yeah, of course.
I think we're going to provide a lot of value to our listeners as well. So with that being said, thank you for being on the show. Thank you for your contributions to hospitality as well, in terms of caring about the bellman and hiring some laid off hoteliers for your company. It's you truly are making a difference, whether you think it or not. So we're looking forward to sharing your story with the hospitality community.
And honestly, Kyle, thank you for having me. This was super fun. I hope to talk to you very soon. Yeah, I mean, this has just gotten me like a little spark of energy just talking to you. So I really do appreciate you, you know, allowing me to come on here, share our story. And, you know, I've even seen your facial expression from the beginning or of the show to the end. Like I could see a brightness, right? Like that's my big thing is, you know, hope. Right. So, you know, thank you for getting me jacked about, you know, where things can go.
Likewise, man. I will be honest with you. I was slightly skeptical when we first started this conversation because I'm thinking all these objections. I was just like, well, no, they haven't thought about that. There's no way they consider this. You considered everything, and it's only going to go beyond that from here. So again, thank you. Let's stay in touch. I'm looking forward to seeing how everything works out.
I appreciate it, Kyle. Have a great day.
Thanks, Derek. We'll talk to you.
See ya.
Well, folks, that does it for another episode of the Hospitality MD podcast. If this is your first time tuning in, welcome to the family and thank you so much for sticking around through this episode. If you've been listening to us for a while, we appreciate you more than you know. We're looking forward to a great 2021 and we can't wait to provide you with as much value as we possibly can. As you're on your way to check out some more of our episodes, be sure to write a review on Apple Podcasts if you enjoyed it, and check out our website, www.hospitality-md.com. We'll see you next week.